With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
All right, it is 12:02 in the Rose City. It is time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Anteater Johnson in with you on this Football Friday. It's going to be a weird Football Friday for me. I want to get your thoughts on this.
Okay, shoot away.
So one of my best friends in the world, it's his birthday today.
Mm-hmm.
And he had texted a while back, probably like a group of seven of us, and said, hey, I have a dinner, and he's going to go to one of the restaurants down here off McAdam.
Okay, close to work. That's nice.
I forget the name of it. Something House. And
House.
Yeah. Boathouse or...
The Chart House?
Chart House.
That's up on Terwilliger.
Yeah, I was close. So
that's in the general area.
You know why I thought it was down here? Is because they had a billboard over here a while back.
You saw the billboard.
And I'd always see the billboard when I drove in.
You connect the dots.
So he's like, yeah, I'm going to go eat here. Let me know if you guys can make it. I have to make a reservation. So I text him back. All right, the wife and I are in.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody responds. They're in. So there's, you know, in the total group, there's probably 12 people committed. And I text him today, hey, happy birthday, man. I'll see you tonight. And I said, so what are we thinking? We thinking like 12 to 15 people. Did everybody get back? Everybody up there? He goes, oh, well, so far of the 60 people I invited.
Wait, what?
We're looking at around 56 to 58.
Wait, what?
And I said,
does he have the restaurant reserved out for a Friday night?
So dude,
I
said, that's going to be a hefty tab.
I said, LOL, 60 people. That's funny. He goes, no, for real though. I have like 56 people confirmed. I go, why?
Dude, why would you invite that many people to your birthday celebration?
So I love this guy like a brother, but the one thing that he does, he's a very, very nice guy. Mm-hmm. He's open to everybody, no matter who you are, what you do, anything. He went to UP. So what he does is he has groups of friends. So like me and like five other people are like his closest. And then he's got his college friends.
Sure, you got the different pockets.
Then he's got his college friends' friends. Then he's got a little bit of the high school friends.
Okay.
And then he's got a little bit of the work friends.
Gotta have your work group.
So he has like five to six groups of people that he always maintains friendships with. Like he makes efforts to always hang out with those groups. Like once a month or once every 2 months.
Dude, more power to him, man. That's way too much work.
Too much work. I'd much rather be left alone.
Yeah.
But I didn't text this to him because it's his birthday. He's not listening, by the way, so I don't have to worry about anything I say.
Okay.
But I just thought, 60 people is a bit much, is it not?
That's a bit aggressive. That's almost like a wedding. Like, how do you even go around? First off, what table do you decide to sit with if you go with that many people? You got to pick the group that you want to be with, and then another group's going to feel left out because they're going out to dinner for your birthday, but they could be sitting on the complete other side of the restaurant.
Right.
So that's just a group of friends that went out for dinner that's not even with the guy whose birthday it is. That's kind of a weird situation. And the older I get, look, I'll say more power to him for wanting to have that many people in his life and keeping that many relationships. And the older I get, it's all about downsizing.
Right. Like that's how I feel.
My groups and my friends, like I have a lot of, you know, friends maybe from back in the day or so. I don't talk to all of them anymore. You know, we'll see each other every now and then, you say what's up, but it's not like it's a constant communication. Or if I had a birthday dinner, I would not invite them out to my birthday dinner. It's about paring down your circle and making life choices in that regard.
I would much rather be at one large table and just have like a circular large table and have the closest people and just drink wine and have conversation.
Yeah.
Because he did this 2 or 3 years ago. He went to a restaurant in Clackamas. And he got a big table. It's probably like a table for 23. And it was our close group and his college friends. And we literally were divided with a table. And his college friends talked and they laughed. And we were talking, and we were not interacting.
Right. It was two different groups.
And that was fine. Nobody had any problems with anybody, but it was just like, we don't know them. They don't know us. We'll say hi, and then that's it. I'll forget your name. You won't remember mine.
The mingling of groups is always an awkward social situation because it happens from time to time.
It does.
When you get, like, we had this with Swigard's birthday a couple of years ago. We went out to a joint in Beaverton and got a couple of whiskey drinks, and there was a couple of people from work that were there, and we had our little pocket. I think Josh Wilcox showed
me,
up.
You and Wilcox.
Yeah, the three of us were hanging out, and then he had other pockets, you know, and it was great. We had a good time because they were nice, but sometimes those people don't want to welcome you into the circle. There's friction in between the groups, and it can create for an awkward evening.
Yeah, I remember your best friend Jeff that you've known since kindergarten.
Yep, big duck honk.
Wait, is that really his name?
What?
Is it Jeff?
Yeah.
You had the name? God. You remembered that?
I didn't remember the name, but I knew he was white, so I went Jeff. It was either a Jeff or a Steve I was going to say,
What's
so I threw Jeff out.
What's the name I can think of?
It's super nice
Jeff.
Guy.
Like, yep.
That's almost, I see, it is the same, and it's also a little different in the circumstance. Like tonight, I'm going to see him, say happy birthday, and then I probably won't talk to him the rest of the night.
If you don't sit with him. Because you see, there was only about 12 of us there. So there was like three different groups of three or three different groups of four.
Yeah, we just smashed some tables together. And
we were all together at the same time.
And I hate to say this, but like now, and I love the guy. I hope he gets a great birthday.
Sure.
Now I'm kind of in a mental spot of looking forward to it.
I don't want
to
do this.
I kind of wanted to just get done so I can go home.
Well, and how is he going to handle the walking around talking to people?
He's
a mover and a schmoozer.
He can't not do anything. Dude, like that he can't just stay home ever.
That is a wedding.
Yes.
He is going to walk around from table to table and say thank you for coming. It's great
to
see
you.
That's
more people than there were at wedding number two.
That's more people than I just personally know. I mean, I just go out there right now.
Yeah.
I don't.
It's like people that I would call to like want to actually hang out and go get a beer and or grab a bite to eat with or go watch a game or something like that. Definitely not 60.
And you want to tell somebody you consider a best friend the truth or how you feel, but you're also kind of like, it's their birthday. I don't want to S on their day. It's clearly important to them.
Yeah, you do you. You fly your flag, man. Whatever, however you want to do it. But
kind of just view it as he's a guy that really wants a lot of people to tell him happy birthday.
You're not doing presents, right? Please tell me that.
No, I looked at the menu. My presence is the present.
Thank you. Okay, good. And then everybody's got to pay for their own time. This is going to be an expensive night out for everybody.
How are they going to split that? Normally, when you get a group like that, it's like, no, there's one check.
There's no way he rented out that kind of. I think they're just probably going to have that many different tables. You're going to be separated all
over
the restaurant.
That's just about the entire restaurant.
Yeah, this is what I'm wondering because I've never been there. But
the bar is downstairs, and it's got a great view looking back over the river. It's fantastic.
So I don't know if I'm buying his number, but he is pretty adamant. He's like 56 people.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much most of the restaurant.
You should ask him if he's reserved the place.
He had to put a fee down.
Oh, then maybe he did.
In case people canceled. Yep. I said, you're paying for the thing. It's your birthday. He goes,
that is so much work for a birthday.
I know. It's just too much.
Last year on my birthday, the fiance asked me what I wanted to do. And I said, I want to stay home. I'll cook my own dinner because I know what I like. I watched The Godfather.
Yeah, you guys missed fun this time. This last one, because Boss came out. Most of my fraternity brothers were there. My brother was there. Jeff showed up again.
Ooh.
Well, don't have a birthday during Hood to Coast. What are you doing? Change your birthday.
My birthday's been there longer, I think, than Hood to Coast. So maybe Hood to Coast needs to move it.
That's a fun poll question. What existed first, Swigard or the Hood to Coast?
No, he did.
He did.
I think Hood to Coast started in 99. Am I wrong?
Oh, no. It's
going on longer than that.
89. 79, somewhere around there.
69.
All right, let's find out what's on tap in today's show.
Nerd and Sprague know what's brewing.
I'm not paid to be bold. I'm paid to be right.
There's a lot of sporting events that you say, oh, I got to go do that.
This is What's on Tap, poured by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach on 1080. The Fan.
Started in 82. There we go.
1982.
Yeah, I started in 71, so they can take a back seat.
He said I started. we got a good show today. A lot of football to discuss. By the way, somebody texting, no, he does not listen to the show, so I have nothing to worry about.
So he's a close friend that doesn't listen to the show, huh?
He's an engineer. He has to work, like legitimately work all day. Maybe he took the day off, though. That'd kind of be him.
Telling me he can't stream it there or something.
Yeah, come on. You got computers and phones. If you're that close of a friend, you make an effort.
Actually, I'd prefer him not to.
You don't want him to listen to the show, huh?
I don't. Yeah. I'm weird. I don't care if people listen to my show.
I mean, I don't really either.
Like in my life, my family and stuff. My dad doesn't listen to my show.
No, but a listener did bring up a good point. Well, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. The listener did bring up a good point, though. What are the chances that one of the 60 are listening?
Oh, there's probably a decent little chance, but if this gets brought up, I'll laugh and just be like, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. You invited 60 people to a birthday.
It's on you, buddy.
That's not like an every birthday occurrence, but it's a big monumental birthday for him, I guess. So we have a lot of football we're going to get to. We got Bill Conley, national college football writer for SB Nation, pretty regular here on our show during football season. He's going to join us today for two segments starting at 12:30. We'll get his thoughts on the national landscape of college football and then break down the Pac-12. He has Oregon State projected with his formula at 2.9 conference wins this year.
Wow.
That has not changed.
2.9 conference wins.
So almost three potential conference wins
so
for the Beavs.
If they win tomorrow, he's sniffing maybe a 5-win season.
Right. And I'll allow him to explain this because this is not his opinion. He has the S&P rankings that he uses. Mm-hmm. Kind of like the Matrix. He's got his own formula and he figures it out. So he'll join us then. We got College Football Weekend we'll get into. Michael Kendrick signed in Seattle. Jalen Ramsey wants to tackle his grandma. I can't wait to watch him versus Gronk. So we'll get to that today. It is our intern's last day, Micah Chen. He's going back to Central Washington. They start school. So what we like to do is we call it kind of our intern time to shine. We allow him to do a sports update, and then we'll welcome him in the studio, and we'll let him spout off his hot takes like Mike Riley's not a good football coach.
That is one of my favorite moments in the history of the radio show. I got to admit.
Well, you saying that would make that intern like...
Oh, there's going to be a tweet in 3 minutes.
He doesn't...
He listens.
He doesn't understand, though, why it's my favorite moment.
Right, but he is...
The stupidity of it is why it's my favorite moment.
Sure, but he is under the influence because of his age and what he has seen growing up in the media landscape. Even if you think it's the dumbest thing you've ever heard.
All pub's good pub?
Utah, yes. All pub is good pub.
Like, just think about
that
for a second.
He thinks he wins by that.
We had an intern on our show argue that Mike Riley meant nothing and was overrated in the historical perspective of Oregon State, and Gary Anderson was a better coach.
Yes.
Yep. Have to question my tutelage there, don't you?
He legitimately argued that.
Yes, he did. We'll get to our Pac-12 picks. I forgot what my record is, so we'll go to those.
Oh, I got him down. I write this stuff down. Okay. I'm the ledger.
You write it down?
I write it down.
It's Friday, Swigard. Give us a break today.
Hey, by the way, there's a commercial that uses one of the words that we often use. Funnier or funniest? What's the funner?
Funner?
Funner. There's a vitamin water commercial, and they have, I don't know if you've seen it, but it's like the water cooler, and he's singing about how nobody hangs out with him anymore, and their slogan is funner than water.
Wow.
And I thought, how about that? Where's the buzzer?
It's controversial.
Yeah, and how many people see that and don't realize that that's not a word?
A lot of people. I mean, we got
buzzed. That's the bigger problem. I'm sure they understand they're making fun. There's a conscious whatever, but yeah, that's sad.
We may briefly talk about the Duck game, although I don't know what.
We're going to break that thing down.
We won't do that.
From a fundamental standpoint.
We will Sprague the Line yet again with Kevin Todd at 2:30. We got a good show today. That's what's on tap. We're on Twitter at Duran Sprague, at Theodore Johnson, at Brandon Sprague. Coming up next, are the Bengals for real? You got Dirt and Sprague. Happy Friday on 1080 The Fan. You know, my ultimate, my goal every day I wake up, I roll out of bed, I walk into this building, I think, I just want to have the first 17 minutes of my radio show be what AJ Green did last night. Three touchdowns.
That's how you want to start a show off?
Dude, he had three touchdowns in 17 minutes.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah, I'd say so. And then 21-0 lead.
And then they almost blew it.
They did kind of almost bangle it. But look, Baltimore wasn't just going to die. But
somebody, I still don't know the answer, and we're going to find out here shortly because we're re-watching the game right now. What happened at the end of the first half?
So I forgot to answer this, too, because you asked it.
Because they went for it on fourth down. The Ravens, it was 28-7. They didn't get it, and I got up and left. I went outside to, like, play with the dog or something.
The Bengals had a 20-second possession, and then with 50 seconds or so left, the Ravens got it. They went 81 yards in seven plays.
Did they throw a pick? Was it just a quick punt? They just went three and out with a couple of timeouts?
That I don't know. I only saw the drive.
Gotcha.
The 80-yard drive.
Yeah, because I came back in and it was halftime. It was 28-14. I was like, well, I guess I got to watch the second half now.
Right. So Cincinnati, they play on Thursday night last night, and they beat Baltimore. They went up big. 21-0 to start the game. Swigard, Texas, is like, hey, did we take Baltimore in our parlay? We're like, hell no.
No.
I don't bet Thursday night football. That is a no-no.
Yeah, you stay away from that.
They're just weird games. And that's another reason I took the Bengals. It just feels like the home team usually always has the benefit here. But Cincinnati, they're 2-0. They did have an impressive win last weekend against Indy because Andrew Luck was playing really good football.
He did.
Some would say if Indy doesn't fumble that at the end in the fourth quarter, maybe they have that drive and they beat Cincinnati. But give the Bengals credit. They go on the road in the opener and they get a win. And then they open at home against Baltimore and they get a big AFC North win. I will ask you, is Houdet for real?
No, there needs to be so much more evidence here before I buy into what Cincinnati is doing. This is a team that we've seen win divisions. This is a team that we've seen be dominant throughout the course of the regular season, only to falter when it matters most. And that's what's important. I thought actually Aikman brought that up last night towards the end of the game. He was talking about the coaches and kind of where they're standing right now with the franchises and how both of them are in some hot water. I mean, Marvin Lewis, if you remember last offseason, was fired and then he wasn't fired. And it's like, well, what are you doing? And they're giving him basically one more year. And Harbaugh over in Baltimore has not been able to kind of break through since winning that Super Bowl. And they've had some okay years, but been up and down. You don't know what you have in Joe Flacco. So I thought it was an interesting conversation. And he said for Marvin Lewis to even keep his job, they need to not only make the playoffs, but probably win a couple of playoff games because you've been there before.
A couple?
That's what he said. I mean, he's never won a playoff. He's been there for almost 20 years and he's never won a playoff game. Think about what other coach and organization gets that long of a leash to not accomplish anything that actually matters. So when it comes to Cincinnati being back, can they be a good team this year? Sure. They were close to being a 500 team last year. They won their last two games at the end of the regular season. They put the Bills in the playoffs with the win, I believe, over these Baltimore Ravens in week 17. They have talent. Joe Mixon, despite punching a chick in the face, is a really good running back. AJ Green's dominant. And they have weapons all over the field, but in terms of buying them, absolutely not yet.
You know, Andy Dalton had four touchdowns. Really impressive effort. The thing with the Bengals is just a matter of, can they sustain it? They seem to be one of those teams that they've had really good years and they've been players in the AFC North. I thought a couple years ago when they lost that playoff game, that game they should have won. The one where...
was it the Charger game at home?
No, the Steeler game.
Oh, the Steeler game, yeah.
Joey Porter was on the field and Perfect got tossed. And,
yeah.
It was a whole weird game. I thought that was their game to win. I don't know if it's a couple. If Cincinnati can sustain, and again, we are 2 weeks into the season here, but if they can stay healthy, I know Michael Johnson's out for maybe a couple weeks, but defensively they can stay sound the way that they are, and they're going to maybe be in a position to win the AFC North.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's a couple, because how does Bengal fan really say if they just win one playoff game? Who are you hiring instead of him? That's kind of been always my thing with Marvin Lewis. Is he the best coach? No. Is he top five? Probably not. No. But he does deserve a lot of credit for going to such a crap organization, turning the expectation around to at least competing in the AFC North and making the postseason. It's unfortunate. They are 0-5. But as you have noted throughout the years, they have dealt with injuries in a couple different games that they've been playing in.
They have.
And so I would just look at it from a Bengal perspective and say, all right, you either go for the young hot assistant that nobody's talking about right now that might emerge,
mm-hmm.
or you just look at the consistency that he has established since he got to Cincinnati.
Jason Garrett has more playoff wins than him.
Okay, but...
Let me just think about that.
You're going to find out real quick.
He had Tony Romo.
Yeah, in the next 2 weeks, they're at Carolina, at Atlanta.
Yeah.
Those are really good tests. Talk to me in 2 weeks.
So if they split those and maybe, you know, don't get blown out in the loss, it's a close fourth quarter game, then I think you start to go, okay, 10, 11 win season might be within the reach.
Right. Also, side note from last night, too, Joe Flacco is just not good.
Well, Joe Flacco is fine. He wasn't good last night. Again, I think Thursday is really tough for me to walk away with a hard-hitting opinion because it's such a weird game and it's such a quick turnaround. I don't understand why they're playing Lamar Jackson in these dumb packages they're doing.
Yeah, they're not even really giving him the ball. He's just out there basically as a decoy every time they put him on the field.
Did you see that? There was one play where it was hike to Flacco. He did like a handoff to an in-motion player,
mm-hmm.
and Lamar was a wide receiver, and he came around. It was going to be like a weird handoff reverse, And Cincinnati grabbed the ball, the running back, and just threw him to the ground.
Right.
I'm like, you can see that play coming a mile away. When Lamar Jackson's on the field, you're not really fooling anybody.
They had one, too, where they even put him in at quarterback, I want to say later in the game, and they were in the red zone. It was like a first and 10 or something, and they lined up Flacco out wide, and they put Lamar Jackson in the shotgun, and guess what they ran? Zone read.
Yeah.
Got about a yard and a half. Everybody knew it was coming, and that was it. They took him out.
Right.
It's like, what are you going to accomplish here? Everybody knows what you're going to, unless you throw them off and, you know, he tosses one into the end zone or something, then it would be like, whoa, nobody saw that coming.
Right.
You bring him in to run the zone read? Of course you're going to run the ball if Lamar Jackson's under center.
Yeah, you know, I know they put up some points, but that game was kind of the feel that I was expecting too.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty good summation of both teams. Cincinnati showing flashes because of their talent, but then somehow almost losing that game late and allowing Baltimore to stick around after being up 21-0, and Baltimore just being really slow out of the gate. And right. If they had a quarterback that could have made some more plays, he threw a couple of bad picks. He just looked really bad last night. I mean, there's talent on that Baltimore football team.
He wasn't extraordinary versus Buffalo either.
He was not. And I pointed that out all week. They won that game big and everybody saw it and figured, well, maybe Flacco's got it down. And no, I mean, that was about Peterman and the Bills offense not being able to get a first down.
In the most Joe Flacco way, though, they somehow get in with like a 9-7 or 10-6 record as a wild card, and he gets
on fire.
In fuego. He can't not complete a pass. It'd be unbelievable in the most Joe Flacco season. So Cincinnati gets a Thursday night football win. They beat Baltimore last night, 2-0 on the year, and they get a division win. All right, let's talk some college football. We're all jacked for this weekend. Two segments with our guy Bill Conley from SB Nation, National College Football Writer. He'll join the show next, but for a swag with the sports update. All right, welcome back in. 12:33, Dirt and Sprague with you. Happy Football Friday. We get ready for the college football weekend, both nationally and in the Pac-12. So we wanted to bring on our guy, Bill Conley, SB Nation, National College Football Writer. He's on Twitter at @SBN_BillC, and you can catch his work at SBNation.com in the college football section. Does a great job, and he joins us now. Thanks for joining the show here in Portland, Bill. We always appreciate when you give us the time. Let's start with the national college football landscape, because there's one game that really has our eye, and that's kind of the point spread and the feel of Ohio State and TCU. It's 12.5, and some people are wondering if the speed of TCU can keep up with what Ohio State is. How do you feel about that matchup?
Yeah, I mean, I have it pretty comfortably for Ohio State just because my numbers love Ohio State. But I really am curious what TCU can do just to kind of confuse Dwayne Haskins. This is obviously going to be his toughest full game test anyway. And you know, we've seen plenty of times where a young quarterback can get baited into making a lot of mistakes against the Gary Patterson defense. I don't trust TCU's offense to move the ball enough to keep it a game for four quarters, but this is kind of a, you know, just measure the like the time it takes Ohio State to put this thing away, and that might be able to tell us something.
You know, one of the other big games this weekend I'm looking at, and I'm just kind of wondering what we have at each team, and that's Auburn and LSU. And Auburn and a team, obviously they have a quality win over Washington in their opener, but Washington was knocking on the door the entire game. You can argue maybe they were even the better team for four quarters, and then LSU with a great win over Miami, and then they struggled last week against a Baylor School for the Blind kind of program. So what do we have in LSU and Auburn? How you feel about that one?
I mean, Auburn's battle-tested. That's one thing you can absolutely say, even going back to last year. I mean, they've been in a lot of these games. They play more of these games than anybody else, it seems. But it does feel like LSU still has a little more to prove here, and maybe that's just fine. I mean, maybe they've done what they needed to running the ball. They force more turnover opportunities than anybody in the country, pretty much. They're very much a Dave Aranda defense, and so that'll get you pretty far. But I think they've kind of obviously played things close to the vest when it comes to the passing game because they haven't needed it. They were up so quickly on Miami. They obviously didn't need it last week. So I think that's going to tell the tale here. I think Auburn's a pretty proven commodity at this point, and we're just waiting to see what LSU has to offer, if they can match Auburn, or if they're still a step or so behind.
You know, I noticed, Bill, that you were touching on coach effect in, I believe it was your last podcast.
Yeah.
And I'm curious because LSU clearly has just a lot of talent. We're wondering about Joe Burrow, if he's going to get better than 50% completion percentage at some point this year. But we know that LSU has the talent to do it. I'm just hesitant because I can't trust Ed Orgeron. How do you come to a conclusion with coach effect and how you view guys?
Well, I think with that, I mean, obviously we haven't had much of a sample size, at least not lately, to figure out anything specific about Edo and coaching effects and whatnot. I do think this year, you know, he to get the job, he promised to make big, bold coordinator hires. And you know, he kept Dave Aranda, which made a lot of sense, but then he went out and got Matt Canada, who wasn't a fit with him at all, but who he kind of felt he needed to get the job. The one thing I think we can say about Steve Insminger is that he and Edo are of the same mindset. So I think it's going to be the most comfortable style for Orgeron to play, and when you're kind of being true to yourself, you tend to know how to manage a game a little better. So he's got that going for him. I just don't know, you know, if they're going to be a couple of years ago when Insminger took over as offensive coordinator mid-season, and Orgeron was the interim head coach. We saw them really kind of establishing a nice physical brand of football that worked really well against like the two really good defenses they played, and then they didn't really have a plan B. They didn't have any sort of extra things to offer those really good defenses. Now we get to find out if they've figured some things out in that regard, because Auburn is a very good defense.
Well, on top of that, too, I saw there's a petition to get rid of their live tiger mascot.
This world sometimes, you know, it's pretty tough to. No, I love it just because it's so different. But I mean, yeah. I can understand the argument a little bit.
Yeah, you're losing an intimidation factor there.
That's right. It intimidated Bear Bryant. Nothing intimidated Bear Bryant but that.
They got a damn tiger on their sideline.
Can you imagine if they went like Wizard of Oz and they put a guy in a costume, painted his face, and he was
the
growling
tiger
on the sideline
in the cage.
Yes. It's a guy named Mike. It's like, that's not doing the same thing.
You're not fooling anybody. One of the big games last weekend, it ended up being a ton of fun to watch, is that Texas A&M and Clemson game. And I think there's interesting stories coming out of it for both programs. But I'll start with Clemson, the winner. How do you think they're handling this quarterback situation? How should they handle it? And who, I mean, I guess who should be the starting quarterback for Clemson?
Well, I think they're going to hold off as long as possible. I mean, I think we know where it's headed eventually, and that, you know, Hunter Lawrence is going to start looking better and better. At least that's the goal here. And then you can kind of hand the reins over to him. I mean, I think overall they handled it. I guess you could say they handled it fine because they won a big road game with that arrangement. And I mean, Kelly Bryant, they got super predictable at the end, and that's kind of. That's one of the things that frustrates me most about Clemson is they really do. I mean, they've got the knockout punch lined up, and then they're like, yeah, we'll just go to the scorecards with it. And then they just jab the rest of the fight, and they run out the clock. And sometimes that lets teams back in the door. We saw that a couple times each of the last couple of years where they did that, and a couple times it really backfired on them. So, you know, I think overall that when they thought they needed to score, they did a good job of scoring, so that's probably a good sign. But it is a situation that's going to get more and more awkward as Lawrence starts to look better and better.
Yeah, we're talking with Bill Conley, SB Nation, National College Football Writer. He's on Twitter at @SBN_BillC is where you can find him. You know, a pretty big non-conference matchup that's kind of flying under the radar is Oklahoma State and Boise State. And I want to see what Boise State can do on the road against Gundy. And I also want to ask kind of a two-parter. One, your feeling on that matchup. And then two, I know this is their big non-conference. Can this non-Power 5... if they beat Oklahoma State, would they have a pretty good argument to be in it if they can run the table?
Yeah, I mean, this is the game I think I'm most excited about this weekend, just from a pure enjoyment standpoint. It should be a lot of fun. You've got two of the most fun teams in the country. Boise State's playing in a two-game sample anyway. They're playing as well as they have since about 2011. It's one thing to defeat bad teams. It's another one to completely humiliate them in every possible way. And in Troy's case, they did it in their building. But I'm very curious to see what they have to offer. Oklahoma State's very fast. Obviously, they don't have as much experience as they did last year, but they're still very fast offense overall. They've got a more sound defensive scheme now. I think that's going to be a really interesting game. As far as the playoff thing goes, I mean, I think the only way a G5 team ever gets in the playoff is with like a multi-year run, like what it seemed for a second Houston might have a couple of years ago, where they go, you know, 13-1 or whatever it was. They have Oklahoma and Louisville lined up the next year. If they can run the table there, then they have that kind of clout built in, and it's a super unfair arrangement, and I'm not even completely sure that would work. I think the committee has shown that basically no matter how impressive you are in September, if you're playing New Mexico in November, you're going to get punished for it, and that's very, very frustrating. But we're gonna see. At the very least, Boise State does have a pedigree, even if they're not as good as they were a few years ago. Even if they haven't been as good for a little while, even if they've only been merely like good G5 good the last few years, they still have that name, and if they can go out, and especially if they can beat Oklahoma State by like 14 points and then run the table, maybe circumstances break for them. I'm never going to be hopeful when it comes to the G5 team.
Yeah, if they do win that game that way and they do run the table, would Bill Connolly think that they should be in the playoff?
I mean, I don't see why not. I was okay with the thought of UCF not making it in last year because of the qualifications of the other teams. I was very frustrated that they were 10th or whatever. They should have been about 6th. And so a lot of this will depend on the qualifications of the other teams, obviously. But they're going to have a case to make, especially if they score a big road game, especially if they continue beating everybody else by like 40 points. I think they'll have proven as much as UCF did and probably even more.
Does Florida State suck? Does Willie Taggart suck at coaching? Like, what the hell? How do we quantify what's going on in Tallahassee?
I think the one thing we can definitely quantify is that their offensive line is terrible at the moment. SB Nation's Bud Elliott, a coworker of mine for a long time, he runs the Florida State site for SB Nation. And he said before the season, like, basically the weakness on this team is offensive tackle. If a guy gets hurt, then they're in serious, serious trouble there. Then, like, immediately a guy got hurt. Another guy kind of flamed out a little bit and has been massively underachieving, and suddenly they can't block anybody. So it's funny how, you know, there aren't any good plays to call when your line's getting blown up. It's hard for a quarterback to make good reads when his line is getting blown up, and I think that's what we're seeing right now. And that's, I'm not worried about the defense. I'm not necessarily worried about Francois, but until they can block, it's going to be hard to win games.
Did you like that hire by them to get Taggart?
I thought so. I mean, obviously it's one of those things where you look at his career record and you can scratch your head if you really want to, but seeing the job he did in making something out of nothing at Western Kentucky, seeing him turn things around and really kind of establish a really fun offensive identity at USF, and then, you know, I thought he did perfectly fine at Oregon last year, right up until the point where Justin Herbert got hurt anyway. And so, I mean, I think he proved enough to earn that job, and I think it could look really good on him, you know, establishing fun and speed and tempo at Florida State again. It sounds great, but yeah, he's got to get some linemen first.
All right, we're talking with Bill Connolly, SB Nation national college football writer. He has agreed to hang out with us for one more segment, and we're going to dive into the Pac-12 weekend and probably hear the horrible truth that the Pac-12 is just no good from Bill Connolly. We'll do that next. Bill, thank you for hanging around, and we'll be with Bill Connolly next in just a couple minutes. Dirt and Sprague on the Fan.
Dusty and Cam in the morning.
Good morning.
Joel Klatt joins us, Fox Sports college football analyst.
I think Justin's the best quarterback in America. I think he's special. And I think with Washington's loss in week one and the fact that Washington's got to go to Eugene on the second week of back-to-back true road games and Oregon's off a bye, I think this could be a special year for Oregon.
The home of Dusty and Cam in the morning. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m. 1080 The Fan.
It's the season of sneezes and sniffles, and your Bi-Mart pharmacy is here to help you keep them away. We have everything you need to stay healthy, including flu shots currently available for the whole family. Call or stop by your Bi-Mart pharmacy for available times and get vaccinated today. And be sure to get ready with cough drops, cold medicine, and natural remedies while you're here. Bi-Mart, get ready for your season for less.
Since we've had USAA, we've had two claims. We had an auto insurance claim and a homeowner's claim. The auto insurance claim, we were rear-ended, and my daughter was actually in the car when it happened. I called USAA. I downloaded the app, and from there on out, it was a very seamless process. They really understood, and they were actually concerned about my daughter's well-being and her safety.
From the moment he uploaded the photos to taking the damaged vehicle to the auto body and having a rental car there, USAA understands the day-to-day life. This is our home. These are our cars. This is where we pick up our kids from school. This is how we get to work.
I feel USAA is very committed to getting you back on your feet. We're the Bakers, and we're USAA members for life.
See how much you could save with USAA by bundling your auto and home insurance. Get a quote today.
Ability to receive a quote depends on membership eligibility. Product membership eligibility and bundling savings restrictions apply and are subject to change. Members paid for their participation. United Services Automobile Association and its affiliate, San Antonio, Texas.
Hi, I'm Damian.
And I'm Steve.
And we're the owners of Crunch Fitness.
This September, get ahead of the class and score big with 54 classes per week.
No reason to sweat the summer ending. The fun continues at Crunch with memberships as low as $9.95 a month.
And at Crunch, we pride ourselves on offering the best fitness classes available since 1989.
And even more exciting, join Crunch this September and enrollment is only $1 on premier memberships.
Stop by one of our four Portland locations or two Vancouver locations Insurance or online at crunch.com. No pressure, no gimmicks, no hassle, and no judgments.
Celebrate the summer with Oregon's favorite craft beer, Widmer Brothers Haifa. Grab some friends and head to the Widmer Brothers Pub and Outdoor Beer Garden in North Portland Thursday through Sunday, where cans of Haifa are just $2 all summer long. Widmer Brothers Haifa, hazy since 86.
Rematch, Canelo, Triple G. On Saturday, September 15th, it's champion versus champion, the sensational Canelo Alvarez versus the undefeated Triple G. The best of the best. And you not like the rest, now you better than the rest. It's the fight of your life. Who gon' be the winner? They can only be one. Rematch.
Canelo versus Triple G2, Saturday, September 15th, 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific, live on pay-per-view.
Live on pay-per-view from Xfinity. Order with your remote or online now at Xfinity.com/boxing.
The all-new Ladd Tap House is your headquarters to watch NFL and college football. Every Sunday, your favorite NFL team is always playing Ladd. Come in early for the 10 o'clock games and enjoy their delicious breakfast buffet. Beer lovers, you can choose from over 40 craft beers and ciders on tap. And Ladd Tap House always has you covered with all your favorite bites. Make Ladd Tap House your destination for the big game. Inquire about complimentary event space for large groups. Ladd Tap House on Southeast 11th, 2 blocks north of Division. Online at LadTapHouse.com.
For all station contest rules, go to 1080thefan.com/rules.
This hour of Sports Talk brought to you in part by Firestone Complete Auto Care. Visit Firestone Complete Auto Care September 13th through the 16th for their epic sales event and get $100 off any purchase of $500 or more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. Details at driveafirestone.com.
Here's a little song I wrote. You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Tapped by Coors Light.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Dirt and Sprague here on The Fan. We're talking some college football with Bill Conley of SBNation.com on Twitter at SBN underscore Bill C is where you can find him. He breaks down everything, has an incredible formula to dictate and show who the favorites are every single week. You can find that at SBNation.com on the college football page. And he's agreed to hang around for this segment as well. Let's go to the Pac-12 slate. And this isn't necessarily a big game, but it is of some interest to us up here because Chip Kelly down at UCLA and seeing what he can do in year one. He suffers an injury against Cincinnati. They fall. They get clobbered last weekend against Oklahoma. Now they're at home against Fresno State. Kind of curious because Fresno State's one of those G5 teams that seem to give a lot of people trouble, especially with their quarterback coach situation right now. How do you feel about what Chip Kelly has going for him this weekend and just kind of where the direction of the Bruins are or it's headed right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously it's a shaky situation when your first start for Dorian Thompson-Robinson is at Oklahoma. That was obviously kind of doomed to failure. But I thought what we saw in that game were, you know, a few possessions there where we at least saw what he's going to have to offer soon. And I think right now it's just kind of a race against the clock. Like, how quickly can they start building momentum? Their biggest problem this weekend isn't necessarily them. It's that they're playing a really good Fresno State team, top 40 caliber team. And if they lose, that's why. You know, Fresno really seems to have its act together under Jeff Tedford. And you know, it's not clear that UCLA is going to be able to move the ball pretty consistently just yet. They should be able to make a few more stops than they did against Oklahoma. But, you know, that offense is probably not going to be quite ready. So if they win this, it's going to be kind of a Cincinnati type of, you know, 22-20 or something kind of game. They're not probably ready to explode just yet.
You know, the showdown in the conference this weekend is Washington and Utah. And granted, that's a tough place to play. It's a night game. Weird things can happen in Pac-12 after dark. But Utah's offense has looked horrible to start the season so far, two games in. What are you thinking about the Huskies and the Utes this weekend?
Well, I think, first of all, we know that Kyle Whittingham likes playing against Washington. He's done, you know, they nearly took down Washington the last couple of years. So they're not going to exactly be, cowering or anything when Washington shows up. But I do think, I really like Utah's offense. I think this is the best offense. This is starting to look like the best offense they've had in a while. And I'm willing to overlook last week's offensive struggles because I think Northern Illinois' defense is actually really good. It's been good a couple of weeks in a row. And I think that explains at least a little bit of it. But I mean, this is still a pretty inefficient offense. There's no question about that. But they can make this a slog. They can play, so far, they've played among the best defense in the country, albeit against not great opponents, and they can really make life tough for Jake Browning. So I think, you know, I would pick Washington because Washington's the better team, but they're not that much better. Utah's got a real solid shot, I think.
So 6.5 points better, do you think?
I mean, anything in that 4-7 range feels pretty good. You know, if you want to, let's see, what do the numbers say specifically on this game? Right now I have 20-15 for Washington. So, the under sounds pretty good there, but I'm not sure. That line's pretty close.
You know, Bill, first of all, you just killed us, and I'll tell you why a little later in this segment. I do want to ask your opinion. We had you on during the summer. You wrote a thing on Jake Browning, or no, you were defending him on Twitter, because people were just killing Jake Browning. And you're like, he's a good quarterback, but people think he should be this next level guy. Well, they lose Auburn, and they looked a little at times against North Dakota. And now people are wondering in Husky Nation about Jake Browning. How do you feel? Have you changed your feelings on him?
You know, all I can say is there are about 150 fan bases in the country that would love to have Jake Browning show up on their roster all of a sudden. I mean, this is it really is the JT Barrett effect, where if you show a certain level as a freshman and then you don't proceed to improve and improve and improve and win a Heisman as a senior, we suddenly decide you stink, where it was really just his fault for setting the bar pretty high out of the gates and not necessarily having the highest ceiling in the world. But, you know, I think he made one really, really bad throw against Auburn. The other problem they had was just that they couldn't finish drives, and that's usually as much on the run game as it is on anything else. They created a ton of passing of scoring opportunities. They just couldn't finish, and I still like him. I think, you know, depending on your team, like I said, most teams would benefit from him showing up and suddenly being number one on the quarterback depth chart.
You know, here in Portland, just looking at the Ducks, we are so ready to just see them against an actual opponent. It's just, you never know what to take against a game like Portland State or Bowling Green. And again, we're going to have the same thing this weekend against San Jose State, who might actually be the worst of the three that they're playing in non-conference. So I'm going to go ahead and look ahead on the calendar. Oregon and Stanford, let's say they're playing tomorrow and Bryce Love is healthy. How is Bill feeling about that game?
Man, that's going to be good. I mean, Oregon's offense versus what looks to be a very, very good Stanford defense. That sounds like a lot of fun to me. It is. Stanford's offense is very, very – last year it was extremely inefficient. That was their big thing. They would go three and out a lot, and then Bryce Love would break off a couple 70-yard runs, and they'd, you know, get to 20-whatever points. This year they've been even less efficient, and Bryce Love hasn't had as many explosion opportunities, in part, at least partially because of injury. But, you know, obviously Arcega Whiteside is looking really good. Costello's doing a pretty good job. I think the passing game has improved, but they still have the same all-or-nothing tendencies right now, and that makes them a volatile team. You know, I think we know what Oregon team will show up if you know, Justin Herbert and all that, but Stanford remains a kind of a wild card because from week to week, they could have one explosion and score about 7 points, or they could have about 8 explosions and hit 40, and you just really never know with those teams that are so all or nothing.
Is Bill Conley buying into Herm Edwards and all the hype he's getting?
Not yet. Michigan, for one thing, I wasn't buying into Michigan State. And so I'm kind of in wait and see mode when it comes to figuring out exactly how impressed to be with that win last week. But I think the good thing is that over the next 2 weeks, we're going to get a lot of Arizona State questions answered. San Diego State doesn't appear to be quite as good this year as they were, but that's still going to be a really tricky defense in a pretty hostile environment. And of course, Washington next week, if they look good, if they beat San Diego State and they at least threaten Washington for a while, then we'll have to start thinking of them as a potential Pac-12 South contender, I think.
Well, let's hype up Oregon State fans a little bit. You have some metrics that are pretty optimistic about the Beavers. What is it about that team that is pointing them in the right direction?
Competence is... You know, they seem to have reached a competent state on offense. They're able to generate some big plays, which is something that hadn't necessarily been the case in recent years. Especially, you know, well, actually run and pass. They've done a good job of having those. You know, I was saying it's a bad thing that Stanford's all or nothing. It's kind of a good thing that Oregon State's all or nothing, because that means there are some alls. So I think they're headed in the right direction offensively. I was curious about the Jonathan Smith hire in general, because it just seemed to make so much sense for a Pacific Northwest team to try to get something off of the Chris Peterson tree, but that defense obviously is going to continue holding the back. It has so far, and it will probably continue to.
Can I get you out of here on this one, Bill? I know you're covering a little bit of the NFL as well, and I know you're really plugged into college football. So my co-host and I and three other coworkers, we made a 7-team parlay bet.
Oof.
I know. It's a cheap bet, but the payout is amazing. So
sure.
I'm going to give you who we picked, and I – yes or no if you agree on the pick, okay?
Okay.
Here we go. We'll start in the NFL. San Francisco -5 against the Lions.
Just based on last week, I would say that's a good pick.
Okay. Syracuse at home +4 against Willie Taggart.
I mean, until Florida State can block, I'm going to say that's a good pick.
New Orleans at home against Cleveland -9.
Cleveland probably can't score enough.
Rams at home against Arizona -13.
I get nervous anytime we get into the double digits with NFL lines, but yeah. Rams look really good late. So that one's tricky, but we'll say yes.
This is the one we probably lose you. Oregon -41.5 against San Jose State.
If they want to, you know, that's kind of the bottom line. In those blowout spreads, I mean, it just kind of depends on when they decide to call off the dogs.
Okay. UW against Utah -6.5.
That one's tougher for me. I do think Utah's going to put up a heck of a fight.
And my co-host, by the way, is adamant that the Huskies will cover this one. So thank you okay. for saying that. And then last one, Kansas City at Pittsburgh +5.
Pittsburgh wasn't very efficient last week. Obviously, the weather had something to do with that. But I'm all for just betting it all on Kansas City until they give us a reason not to, because they're fun.
Sounds like you want in on our parlay next week.
You want
week.
In? We got, yeah.
You're agreeing. I was trying to be nice, but I only really sort of half disagreed with a couple of them. So that's pretty good for a 35-piece parlay there.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
Hey, that's right. Your metrics, you're hitting 57% thus far. So I'm just going to take that, and I'm going to assume you're going to give us 100% this weekend, and we will thank you when we hit the parlay. Thank you for the time, Bill. We always appreciate it. Continued success and good work at SB Nation.
Thank you.
All right, there we go. Bill Conley, SBNation.com, national college football writer, and he's on Twitter at @SBN_BillC.
I thought his points about Stanford and Oregon State were really good.
Too much confidence in my parlay. I'm even more nervous.
We're going to win this thing, man.
We are.
We're taking home the big check. Can we get a big check when we win?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm hoping for.
I want cash.
Yeah, straight cash on me. All right, we got a loaded second hour. Tom Brady praises another quarterback that actually makes one of us right.
Let's go!
Hint, it's not me. We'll get to that with the college football weekend. I do want to dive into that here in just a couple minutes, give our thoughts. Michael Kendrick signed in Seattle. Jalen Ramsey says he tackled his own grandma. That's how pumped he is to play against Gronk. And we wish bon voyage to our intern as this is his last day here on The Fan. All of that is ahead. Hour 2, Dirt and Sprague. Back with more on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.